Welcome to the Pivot All About Bikes podcast. In one of our former episodes, we were talking about a completely redesigned Pivot Mach 4 SL, a cross-country marathon trail-devouring machine. But a bike is nothing without a rider. Hannah Ray Otto not only killed it in her early career in a triathlon, but also set an outstanding FKT on the whole enchilada in Moab, and just recently took the win at Snowshoe Cross Country Marathon World Cup. She is one of our amazing endurance athletes and knows a thing or two about determination and how to get on top of the boxes. Luckily, she will share her knowledge with you. Welcome, Hannah. Did I oversell you in the intro?
Thanks so much. I'm honestly so thankful to have a brand like Pivot that supports me in so many of these different disciplines and pursuits, because as you mentioned, there's a lot of different things that I love to do with my bike.
You did not start right away on mountain biking, right? As a kid, you had been quite successful as a triathlete.
Yeah, I raced triathlon for 11 years. So I raced triathlon from 9 years old until 20 years old. So I raced on-road, junior elite, ITU, on-road triathlon. So I represented the USA at things like Junior Pan American Championships. I also raced on-road non-draft legal triathlon in events such as Escape from Alcatraz. And then I also raced off-road triathlons like Xterra. And it's really crazy, actually, to think about how quickly time seems to move. Because when I think back to my time racing triathlon, I felt at that time that those successes would be the cornerstone for which I launched my career. But now as a cyclist, it just feels like that triathlon life was so long ago.
It's only getting faster from here.
Don't tell me that.
What was the point where you actually decided, okay, I will skip the swimming part and the running part and take a focus on my bike and also take it not like only on the road, but off road?
So I raced, like I said, I raced triathlon from 9 to 20 years old. And so I actually went to college as a triathlete. I swam in university for their swim team, and I ran in university for their cross country and track team. And then I was also on the cycling team in college. And as a triathlete, my mindset was, well, if you swim, bike, and run with the best swim, bike, and runners, then you will become the best triathlete. That was the extent of my cycling career, was I rode with cyclists and I was on the team to make me the best triathlete I could be. But my junior year of college, the team that I was on at the time was dissolving their triathlon program and offered me the opportunity to continue on the team as a professional cyclist. And I had this moment as a junior in college, getting ready to graduate, looking at my life and what I would be pursuing as a professional. And I had the chance to make a living as a professional athlete. And so I jumped into the deep end and I went for it, and I'm so thankful I did, because now I'm living my dream of being a professional athlete, and gosh, I love the mountain bike. So I'm just so happy to be a cyclist.
This sounds like you had a very competitive mindset from beginning and very early age. Would you say this affected the way you now, years later, when you enter a race?
You know, I think I've always had a competitive mindset. I think even long before triathlon. So before 9 years old, I played soccer. And one of my favorite stories to tell is I was on the soccer team. I was at practice. We were scrimmaging. And the coach said, whichever team loses this scrimmage will need to do push-ups. And my team won the scrimmage, but I got down to do push-ups anyways. And the coach turned to me and said, Hannah, what are you doing? You won. Why are you doing push-ups? And I said, I don't want the other team to be stronger than me, coach. And so I think this competitive edge and this drive to be not only the best, but the best that I can be, is really something that I was born with. And I think it's something that you need to race, not only to race at this level, because I think most people, when they stand on a start line, they become very competitive. But I think that competitive mindset, where it really pays off, is having the motivation to train hard every single day, all year round.
Sounds like you're a hard one to beat when you're on the sprint towards the finish line, right?
At that point, it's just whoever wants it the most.
You overcame a big challenge last year. You were suffering from a big concussion. How did you get your confidence back? Because you sound like you're like there to win and you're hungry.
Absolutely. I think this has really been a lesson that I've learned all throughout my career. If you're a cyclist and you haven't learned this lesson yet, it's coming for you. You will learn it. Because as cyclists, especially as mountain bikers, we all crash. Every single one of us is going to crash. Sometimes you'll get hurt, and sometimes you won't. And when you get hurt, it can be not only frustrating and not only set you back literally because you're not able to do the training that you want to do, but it can also set your confidence back as well. Like you just said, you can become timid on the trails, you can become less confident in your abilities because you're not practicing the way you want to. But I think what I've learned is I've really learned how to overcome that. And I think the perfect story of that is, I did get a concussion last year, but that was actually my second injury of the year. And my first injury of the year was I crashed and separated my shoulder at a World Cup the week before Leadville. And so I was in doctor's appointments all the way up until the Wednesday before the Saturday race at Leadville, unsure if I would even be allowed to race due to the shoulder injury. And then after getting clearance, I showed up to Leadville, not able to lift my left arm up above my head, and I won.
Wow.
And I think it showed me that while setbacks never get easier, you just learn that they aren't the end of the story. And you learn that if you want it bad enough, there is always a way to overcome. And it might go a little more slowly than you'd like it to, but you will get back. And so having that confidence to know that you're going to get back, I think honestly, it just makes you get back even faster.
Did it play a role to stretch yourself a little bit towards the enduro segment when you had those crashes, like to get more confidence in descending and higher speeds, because you now also use a Firebird as a training tool?
Absolutely. I love my Firebird so much. And for me, the Firebird is my confidence tool. When I get on the Firebird, I feel absolutely invincible. And I think that carries over to how I race on something like the Mach 4 and even on the vault. Because when you, as you said, you can go so much faster and feel comfortable with that speed on the Firebird. And you're still using those skills on the other bikes, something like eye tracking and the way that you see the lines on the trails, all of those things directly translate to those shorter travel bikes. And so I actually really like when I'm able to, I like to go out on my Firebird and ride a difficult trail on the Firebird before I ride it on my Mach 4SL. Because the Firebird, because it is so much slacker, it gives me a lot of forgiveness. So if I take a wrong line or I make a mistake and I stuff my wheel into a rock, I'm not going to necessarily go over the bars. That bike has so much forgiveness and it's so strong that I can ride out a lot of things that I might otherwise crash on. And so that was something I really focused on in the whole enchilada is I rode that trail on my Firebird a couple times actually before I took my Mach 4 on it because the Firebird allowed me to make all of those mistakes ahead of time without the consequence of crashing. So then when I knew the lines really well and I was confident in my ability to execute on the lines, I could go out with less mistakes and ride it on the Mach 4.
Firebird for enduro training, Mach 4SL for cross country and marathon, LASSSL for specific endurance, and of course the Volt for gravel application. You use pretty much almost the whole spectrum of the Pivot lineup besides a downhill bike. But
Also, the Firebird aside, how do you decide which bike are you taking to the starting line? Or will there also be an enduro race on your schedule?
I don't know if that Firebird will see a start line, but it will help me get to all of the start lines. That's a great question because there's a lot that goes into picking the right tool for the right course. Because at the end of the day, what you're really looking for is the fastest way to get from point A to point B. You have to weigh the costs and benefits of having a little extra weight from having a lot of suspension to having a very lightweight bike from having little to no suspension. So in the long races also, you want to take comfort into consideration. Because if you become uncomfortable from, for example, having no suspension and you're just getting beat up, that will impact your ability to put power into the pedals. And then, like we're talking about, you know, since we're talking about confidence, you might think about that. But a lot of people on race day don't really take confidence into consideration because they're so focused on picking the bike that is the lightest. Again, if we're just talking about raw speed, your confidence and your ability to carry that confidence through every obstacle will make you the fastest you can be. You don't want to be approaching an obstacle nervous for it on race day. You're going to be slowing down whether you realize it or not. You want to approach everything with the greatest amount of confidence that you can. And so those are really all the things that I take into consideration when I look at the course and look at my bikes. You know, I look at lightweight, I look at my comfort, I look at my confidence.
Besides your confidence, there's a baseline that we all might be able to cover. I mean, the internet is full of training programs on how you get your lactate threshold up, prepping meals, turning your body into a perfect machine. How do you train your mind in particular for a race, like getting confidence and in the race mood?
I would answer this question in two different ways. So the first step, I think, is practicing that mindset in training. Every single day when you go out to ride your bike is a chance to improve your mindset, whether that's overcoming when you feel exhausted during a challenging interval, or whether it's overcoming a challenging obstacle on the trail. Those are all moments when you get to practice that positive self-talk and practice saying to yourself, I can do this and I will do this. And the more you practice that, it's just like a muscle. Your brain gets stronger and you train your brain that that is the answer to these solutions. And so then when you get on the start line on race day, you will be filled with motivation from I can. And then from a little bit more of an objective standpoint, specifically for races, I think it's really important for me to look at the course and break down the course and have specific goals for each section on the course. And so when I do that, that takes away the ability to get overly nervous about a section, because when my brain starts to get nervous or antsy or insecure about a section on the course, I can default to this very objective thing that I have planned out. So an example of that would be maybe on a particular climb, I start to feel exhausted and I start to default to, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. But I made the plan that on this climb, I'm going to hold a very specific wattage and a very specific cadence. So in that moment, when I start thinking I'm really tired, I default back to, no, here's my plan. Here are my objective numbers. Am I achieving that? And that takes me out of that subjective mindset and puts me into a task that I can then achieve.
Sounds like you never question yourself in a climb, why am I doing this?
Honestly, not really. And I think that that's a really important part of this all, is when you stand on the start line, to be so sure of the fact that you want to be there. I mean, I just love racing my bike so much. And so don't get me wrong, there are certainly moments in the race where you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is the hardest thing I have ever done. I want the finish line to come. Everyone is thinking that, from pros to the last place finisher. We are all thinking, I want this to be over, because we're pushing ourselves and challenging ourselves. But I never question why I'm doing it, because I know it's something that I love. And I think I prove that to myself by going out and riding every day.
When it comes to a strong mind, we need to talk about one of the darker places. As an athlete, you probably have a kind of love-hate relationship with it. And it's what we call the type 2 fun, which we are proud of when we make it through. We're talking about the pain cave.
Man, I put myself in the pain cave all of the time. I think that's part of my job. Really, I'm viewing that pain cave as stretching my abilities. So every single time I enter into that pain cave, I try and counter that thought with, because I'm pushing myself now, I am getting better. And that is super exciting to me.
There's a full video of your, let's say, spoiler alert, successful attempt to set the fastest known time on the whole enchilada trail. And before we talk about this experience, we need to get the facts out there. This has a distance of 55.27 miles, which is almost 90 kilometers. 8,011 feet of climbing is equivalent to 1,441 meters. And you did it in 5 hours, 50 minutes, and 38 seconds. How deep you have to dig?
Yeah, this was the whole enchilada FKT attempt was even harder than I thought it would be. So the whole enchilada, the route that I did was I climbed from the town of Moab all the way to the top of the whole enchilada. So for those who are familiar with it, that's the top of Burro Pass. And then I descended down the world famous single track. So making that climb, the climb alone was 3.5 hours of nonstop climbing. It started at 4,000 feet of elevation and summited at over 11,000 feet of elevation. And so it was really challenging from a physiological standpoint as well, because there's not much oxygen up there. Mm-hmm. And then when you are the most possible exhausted at the top, you then enter this really challenging single track. And you then descend on that single track for another almost 2.5 hours. And yeah, it was really, really hard. It was even harder than I thought it was going to be. And again, though, spoiler alert, in the video, I even talk about when I summited that climb, I was in a really dark place. It was so hard. But I even had the thought then, well, if this was easy, it wouldn't be the challenge that I wanted it to be. And so I think still finding those positive moments, even when you're suffering so hard, is really important just for the overall experience.
How important was your husband Clayton on that? Because he helped you preparing for that, and he was in Moab with you while you set that record.
Clayton is a super integral part of all of my cycling. So Clayton, he used to race professional and enduro racing. So he is a phenomenal athlete himself. He helps me figure out a lot of my lines. He travels with me to a lot of events as my mechanic. And for this attempt in particular, in order to make it a fastest known time, he couldn't be out there with me on the attempt. He couldn't give me any information on the attempt since it has to be a completely individual effort. But he was there with me in all the days leading up to it. And he rode that trail with me multiple times before my solo attempt in order to help me figure out all of those various lines. And that's an encouragement I would give to other people as well, is if you are nervous about something, if you're unsure of how to take an obstacle, it is extremely helpful to watch someone else do it or to follow their line into that obstacle first. So don't feel like you have to conquer everything alone. I think even though cycling is typically considered an individual sport, there is huge power to riding things in groups or with friends.
When you trained that trail or the downhill of it, did you have like a kind of a video in your mind where you're hitting exactly the same lines? Because sometimes it could get confusing on up a porcupine.
Yeah, that is an excellent question, because it's a, like I said, it's a 2.5 hour descent. So it is really hard to remember where you're going on a lot of these lines. And a lot of them are blind lines as well. So you come up to the edge, what looks like the edge of a cliff, and you'll have a drop and you won't be able to see what's on the other side of that drop until you're right on top of it. And so if you want to be fast, if you don't want to be grabbing breaks on top of it to figure out where your line is, you really have to have a good plan. And so for me, a lot of it was exactly like you said, memorizing visual cues. And so on that whole descent, I had little markers, sort of mental markers on the trail, not real ones, but mental markers on the trail of remembering, when I hit the weird looking tree, I need to be to the right side of the crack on the rock. And then when, after I go on the right side of the crack on the rock, I need to lift my front wheel up because there's another rock on the opposite side of the pointy rock. A lot of things like that. And I just had it fairly memorized all the way down. And I think that's another reason why I feel sort of a love story with this trail after this attempt, because I know it inside and out at this point.
It sounds more like you raced a downhill course, because this is what they do, like sitting at the starting gate, eyes closed and moving their heads, like going down in a kind of a virtual reality in their mind down the trail.
It definitely gave me a massive appreciation for all of what those athletes do, because it is so challenging. And I think the mental side of that, the preparation that it takes to remember all of those minute details, those athletes are extremely impressive. They suffer in their own way in their preparation. And it's just, I'm so impressed by what those downhill athletes are able to achieve.
If our listeners out there now got inspired to ride the whole enchilada, like the full thing, like starting at town, going all the way up to Burro Pass and going all the way down again, the specific GPS data are out there and you can compare yourself to Hannah. Like riding with pros like her, I can tell you, you will be humbled afterwards.
Yeah, and I really hope that people do go and attempt this route. If you think you can beat my time, please go do it. It'll be very exciting. If you don't think you can beat it, go try and set your own fastest time. And every year, go out there and try and beat it. It can be a great way that you measure your progress. And that was one of the reasons why I loved this trail so much, is because it has a little bit of everything. You can see your strength and your climbing improve. And also you can see your descending improve. And so just keep trying it. And if speed is of no interest to you, just go enjoy it. Because that's another wonderful thing about this trail, is I think that this trail really showcases everything your bike is capable of. Our bikes nowadays are such amazing, capable machines, and they can take us all the way up these massive mountains. They can take us through the aspen trees, through the desert terrain, through Porcupine Rim, which is all these slick rocks. And then in the whole enchilada, you end at the Colorado River. And it's just a really special experience that you don't need to be fast to do. You can just simply love it and enjoy every moment of it.
We learned that you are a super determined person pursuing your goals with full force. What would you recommend a young female athlete when it comes to consider and pursue the dream of becoming part of the professional world in sports?
Yeah, this is such an exciting question, because I think I get so excited when I see young female athletes pursuing this dream. And my two biggest suggestions to them are focus on the process and focus on your own improvement. And those are two things that throughout my entire story have been really important to me. So going all the way back to the start of this conversation, switching from triathlon to mountain biking, you know, I won the world championship in triathlon. And when I switched over to mountain biking, I was not winning immediately. In fact, I was towards the tail end in many races, but I kept my head down and I kept just focusing on a little bit at a time. I focused on going from 40th to 30th to 20th and finally finding my way to the podium. And I think for a lot of athletes, when they first start out, it can be really intimidating to think, oh my gosh, I have so far to go in order to win this race. Don't worry about that. Just worrying about being a little bit better than you were yesterday, and that 1% improvement will eventually add up to a whole lot.
Hannah, thank you for your insights and thank you for being such a great role model. That's amazing.
Thank you. Have a great evening.